Hello, Flying Clubs enthusiasts. This is Steve with Flying Clubs with the Flying Clubs team, and I'm joined by my colleague Drew.
Hey, everyone. Drew here. Welcome to episode 14 of Flying Clubs Radio. This week, we're going to revisit the topic we first covered in our Radio Edition 3, so welcome to Insurance Woes, Part 2. Back in April, when we first reported on aviation insurance, things were in disarray, with spiraling premiums and hints that some individuals, including clubs, were not able to get insurance at any price. Several AOPA departments have been working with and lobbying aviation insurance providers to try and understand what caused the stepwise change in premiums, and especially why insurance companies are basically deciding who can fly and who can't. Just like for Edition 3, Steve dug more into this topic and presented a spicy session for Series 3 of our popular Flying Clubs workshops. Steve will talk more about the material in this radio edition. Steve, to get us started, what have we learned about the motivation for the changes in premiums and insurability since the start of the year?
Yeah, thanks, Drew. This has certainly been an interesting first half of the year on many fronts, and aviation insurance ranks up there with the other head scratchers. Along with other AOPA staffers, I contacted a few of the big aviation insurance brokers and underwriters, and, well, they must all be talking to each other as their stories are remarkably aligned. Now, in listening to them, and without drinking the Kool-Aid, I do start to see their dilemma on purely business grounds, and I suppose a realization that not much is going to happen based purely on complaining and are being outraged at egregious increases. I'm now moved beyond ranting, and while I'm not accepting anything, and I still want to explain to insurance companies that refusing to insure people is a pretty stupid business model for an insurance company, I have reached a point where I realize we must start to help ourselves. So I think there are two areas within our direct control.
Well, that is a refreshingly different perspective, Steve. And I do like the idea of us coming back to some control rather than just complaining. So what is it that we can do?
To answer this, I think we need to understand what set it all in motion. We know there are just a handful of aviation underwriters, and we also know that most are involved in commercial aviation, which of course is much bigger, a much bigger market than general aviation. The insurance companies are claiming that their smaller GA departments have been flying under the corporate radar for years, and no one really cared, as the commercial side was where the big profits were being made. I paraphrase a bit here, but I heard GA departments were able to keep prices low and even take losses because they're such a small part of the overall business. Now fast forward to the end of 2019. High-profile claims involving the deaths of celebrities, expensive aircraft write-offs, and the whole Boeing 737 MAX situation has shifted the aviation industry into one of imminent losses. Suddenly, every department is under the spotlight, and every one of them had to start contributing to the P&L, meaning the P for profit. So here's another quote that I heard. Underwriting today is more in the hands of actuaries and not those who have any aviation knowledge, skills, or passion. In other words, we can complain all we like about our rights to fly, but insurance is just business.
Okay, understood. But again, what can pilots and clubs do about it?
Yeah, I'm nearly there. I think just a few more points of introduction. We heard in Flying Clubs Radio Edition 3 that there are many factors affecting insurance policies. Let's revisit those. Drew, how about you remind us of some of them?
Sure, Steve. Aircraft type is a big one. We've seen that fixed tricycle gear, standard airworthiness aircraft are the lowest risk and therefore cheaper to insure. Simpler and less sophisticated aircraft are also important too. Aircraft hull value significantly affects the total annual premium. Lower cost aircraft will keep your rate down. The pilot to aircraft ratio is also important. We recommend that you set a maximum of 10 members per aircraft. Any more means more risk and therefore higher premiums. The age of pilots is also a ever-present concern. Member pilots under the age of 70 will receive more favorable rates. So everyone just stop getting older, please. The amount of claims that your club has is also important. If you remain claims free, and a culture of safety will go a long way towards that goal, you'll have lower insurance rates. Your safety culture is also very important. Outline in detail your specific safety seminars, mandatory trainings, and proficiency requirements. Underwriters love this and will have discounts standing by for you. Your club bylaws also should contain an outline of club expectations for members, especially regarding safety and proficiency. We also reiterated from Assured Partners Insurance some tips for mitigating insurance rate increases. I'll go over a few of those now. First is pilot training and ratings. Pilots who participate in regular training are less likely to have an accident or incident. Strive for everyone in your club to have an instrument rating. Number two, pilot proficiency. The more you fly, the more experience you gain. Make sure you fly over 100 hours per year to show that you're not just remaining current, but are being truly proficient. Number three, safety courses. Exceeding minimum safety standards is a key to underwriting consideration rates. Some carriers recognize safety courses you have completed, and they know this is a good way for you to stay on top of your game. And number four, provide detailed information. Be prepared to answer more questions and provide more details than in previous years. Limited or incomplete answers to underwriting questions could have a negative impact, so try to get it right the first time. So Steve, are we now ready to outline some tangible steps that we can take to control insurance?
Yes, indeed. So buckle up and here we go. So think hard about your club's mission and whether the club aircraft still fits that mission. If most members are just doing short flights, do you really need the insurance overhead of that Bonanza? And if you do keep the Bonanza, be prepared to live with stricter limitations, required certificates and ratings. For example, everyone has an instrument rating, the hours in type, the minimum number of hours in type, and perhaps even a number of hours per year. Total hours, obviously, the more you fly, the more hours in type and the more total hours you get. So flying satisfies both of those. And also absolutely no primary instruction in something like a Bonanza. Now, just making that statement, there shall be no primary instruction, may go a long way to helping you with some lower costs of insurance. By the way, notice that all of these factors relate to flying proficiency. The insurance companies are clearly telling us that being more proficient means lower risk to them financially, but also to us for staying alive, which affects them financially. So more on this in a few minutes. Are you being realistic with the hull valuation? We all like to think that our planes are worth more than they are, but do check with AOPA VREF to get a realistic valuation. Hull coverage accounts for around 70% of the premium, so it's worth getting the number right. Don't just renew your club policy. Presumably, members have been flying over the past year, so they have more years in type and more total hours. Make sure this is clearly reflected on the application form. Also, regarding those advanced certificates and ratings we talked about, make sure that they're clearly articulated, and particularly if people have gained them over the previous year. As mentioned previously, if all club members have advanced certificates and an instrument rating, you're in a very good position to negotiate a decent discount. Start the reapplication process early and make your broker work for you. Ask for a couple of quotes with different underwriters. Try to get information about the sensitivity of premiums to things like hull coverage, deductibles, and so on, so now you can make informed decisions. So here's an interesting one. Why not think about self-insuring the hull? If you have a pile of money in the bank, why not earmark some of it for aircraft repairs and perhaps outright replacements, rather than paying for hull insurance every year on the chance that you'll make a claim? Oh, and if you do make a claim, it's going to be more difficult and expensive to get insurance next year. So this does drive me to a rant. You know, we pay for insurance year in, year out, and then when we do have to make a claim, we get reprimanded and have to pay for a higher premium. So are you a higher risk because you've had an accident or haven't had one yet? If we knew we'd never make a claim, we'd never pay for insurance. So the whole point is that we have it just in case and that we use it when we need to use it, right? So think seriously here, if you can, about self-insuring the hull and save money year over year, money that you can put towards another aircraft in just a few short years. If you don't have money in the bank to cover hull repairs and replacement, discuss the idea of a one-time assessment with club members so that you put money into a self-insurance fund. Alternatively, and this one requires some nerves of steel, reverse the situation and play the odds that an accident or incident will not happen and state in the bylaws that members will be equally assessed for the cost of repairs or replacement should the need arise. So liability insurance is a different kettle of fish. In fact, it's got nothing to do with fish at all. We absolutely advise that a club carry liability insurance, but do check with your agent to ensure that the policy extends coverage to club members. If not, and actually even if so, members would be wise to consider taking additional personal liability cover. If a member owns less than 20% of a co-owned aircraft, then they can get affordable coverage with a non-owner's policy. We raised the idea of liability-only policies with an insurance broker and actually got a really cold reception. So I think we're definitely onto something here. The broker suggested there may be a 25% markup on liability-only policies, which in our opinion is just pure and simple gouging. The liability risk should be the same irrespective of hull coverage. So we suggest you push back hard on this money-grabbing tactic. Another aviation insurer, one that underwrites their own policies, was adamant that they would quote liability-only policies without any markup. Good for them. So, shop around. I've left the big one until last. It's absolutely in our sphere of control, and I feel strongly that cheap insurance and complacency have previously landed us in a place where we wax eloquently about safety, and especially proficiency, without really doing much about it. This is going to sound harsh, but yada, yada, yada. Accidents happen to other people, and it's not impacted my insurance yet, so whatever. If you do think this is too harsh, then take a look at the accident statistics. I'm a fast team safety rep for the Wings program, so I follow accident stats really carefully, especially those published by the Air Safety Institute. Let's be really clear here. Insurance rates are driven by claims that come from accidents. Reducing accidents reduces claims, reduces premiums, at least in a world of fair business practices. So again, you'll think me harsh and even perhaps frivolous, but we are now in a place of wanting to reduce accidents, not just to save somebody's life, but also to reduce everyone's insurance premiums. If I can paraphrase Hermione Granger bemoaning to Harry Potter about being expelled from Hogwarts, we could die, or worse, have to pay higher insurance premiums. If you look at the stats, we, the pilots, are responsible for more than 70% of accidents. And it's been like this for years. I mean, decades. Here is the opportunity. Reducing the 70% saves lives and reduces insurance claims, which over time will reduce premiums.
That makes sense, Steve. But can you tell us a bit about the type of accidents and the cost they have on insurance companies?
Yeah, some of these accidents are still in the unforgivable sin category, even with all the seminars and webinars and videos and quizzes, all of the education, things like running out of fuel and writing off the airplane or causing injury or death. It still happens. Loss of control. By the way, loss of control is not a cause of accidents. It's a result. You need to dig much deeper to understand and so mitigate the causes of loss of control. I think we'll do more of that in another radio show. Controlled flight into terrain. It still happens. People fly their airplanes into the sides of mountains. VFR into IMC. Weather is completely unforgiving. If you get caught in an accident and it's weather related, the chances of a fatality are huge. And also, of course, drugs and booze, which is completely unforgivable. We have actual examples from this year where clubs involved in this type of accident are simply uninsurable. They have to close down and hopefully reform with a very different set of bylaws and with a very different safety culture. Actually, that's a really good word to use here, culture. All of these unforgivable sins are definitely cultural in origin, rather like the five hazardous attitudes. So it turns out that the very high profile and high dollar claims are a relatively small percentage of the total. The vast majority of accidents and claims are the ones that, and I quote, drag heavily on the P&L, the profit and loss. Examples are gear up landings. This incurs an average cost of $70,000 to the insurance companies. Loss of control on the ground, you know, not looking where you're going and hitting things. Hard landings. Prop strikes. The average prop strike repair is about $30,000 per incident. So these are all entirely in our sphere of influence. And we need to move from outrage to acting on the root causes. So take the pledge. No distractions while taxiing. Don't look down. Don't program that GPS. Don't fiddle with anything. Taxi. And when you're parked at the end at the run-up area, then you can do whatever you need to do or do it beforehand. Use checklists. They are there for a reason. And verbalize three in the green in retractables at least three times on the approach. Stabilize approaches or immediately go around.
Well, gosh, Steve, I see why you warned that this might be a bit controversial. But I definitely see your point. We cannot control the business of insurance, but we can absolutely control the factors that influence that business. So what do you recommend the clubs do about it?
Yes, exactly. And right, let's do something about this. And the key word I strongly believe is proficiency. A major cause of increasing insurance rates is, as we've seen, our collective inability to reduce accidents and therefore claims to the level of entitlement based on safety education. AOPA, ASI, FAA, NAFI, SAVE, NTSB, they've all been telling us for years that safety is up to us. Yet we continue to train in pretty much the same way and fall into the same traps. It's insane. So what's your club going to do about this? Well, I can tell you what my club did. We embraced Wings for Clubs that Drew and I rolled out earlier this year. Here's some of the highlights. It's no longer nice, but it's essential to have a club safety culture that requires member pilots' proficiency and insists on sterile cockpit flight deck procedures at high-risk phases of operation. Go well beyond currency. Strive for proficiency. The FARs tell us what we need to do to stay current, but say nothing about how well we perform those tasks. We need to invent, no need to invent a pilot proficiency program. That's good news. We don't have to invent the wheel here. The FAA have done it for us with the WINGS program. All members, including CFI, should be required to complete a phase of WINGS every year. Knowledge, seminars, webinars, quizzes, courses, and most importantly, and the bit that most people who use WINGS don't practice, are those three flight activities every year. Instead of doing a flight review every 24 calendar months, do all of this lot and three flight activities with a CFI to the standards as stipulated in the WINGS flight tasks, and you're going to stay proficient. Now, once you've done that, bundle members' official government-sanctioned WINGS transcripts. Bundle those up with your insurance application as proof of being a safety-minded club. For more information on WINGS for clubs, you can listen to Flying Clubs Radio Edition 8, Fast Team WINGS for Flying Clubs.
Great points, Steve. And these give clubs the chance to control their own insurance destiny and at the same time become better, safer pilots. As always, if you have questions, and you will, please feel free to contact Steve or me at flyingclubnetwork@aopa.org. So until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.